Hello, everyone. Hope you're all doing well today. This is Mental Health Matters on the Jefferson Exchange with Jefferson Public Radio and NAMI Southern Oregon. I'm Andra Hollenbeck with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness Southern Oregon. And when we talk about health, we cannot discuss complete health without talking about our mental health. On this program, we highlight mental health issues in our community and ways we can improve mental health for everyone. Today, we are discussing the roles and challenges for those who support and help care for people with serious and persistent mental health conditions, particularly schizophrenia. And we're talking with Nicole Gillen, who is a mom, a caretaker, and author of a book called Schizophrenia and Other Related Disorders, Handbook for Caretakers. So good day, Nicole, and thank you for joining us on the program today.
Oh, thank you so much, Andra, and thank you for having me here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So your book came out of direct and personal experience as a caretaker. Can you tell us, let's start off with just a bit about your background and how you came to write this book?
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's a great question. I thought I understood mental health before one of my daughters got sick with schizophrenia. I thought I understood how to work with doctors and treatment and medications and how to get the right information. And then my child got sick with schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And all bets were off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was astonishing to realize, number one, how little information was out there.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone in this community, whether you're diagnosed or you're a caregiver, how complicated it is, how mm-hmm. confusing it is, how there's regulations like HIPAA that are these massive roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kept getting worse and worse and more complicated. And one day I woke up and said, well, I'm not just going to sit here and complain all day. I'm going to see if I can do something. And that's why I wrote the book.
Ah, so definitely out of your personal experience. Let's start with just how common are serious and persistent mental illnesses like schizophrenia? How common is that?
It's about 1% of the overall population. But what's interesting is when you compare it to other brain illnesses
mm-hmm.
like Alzheimer's or dementia or even Parkinson's, by a percentage, there are more people in the country with schizophrenia than other brain illnesses.
Okay.
But unfortunately, it gets a fraction of the research and a fraction of the focus and a fraction of the empathy for the other brain illnesses.
Mm.
And it's just really criminal because people who typically get diagnosed are young, and yet they face an entire life of this and don't get the same kind of support on all levels that other brain illnesses do.
Mm-hmm. What kind of impacts do these illnesses have on individuals, families, their communities?
Gosh, where do you start?
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, as we all know, there's a lot of stigma
uh-huh.
around schizophrenia. And
uh-huh.
that stigma can cost jobs,
uh-huh.
friendships, family relationships. There's the actual impact of the disease on the person. And maybe they don't get to recovery, or maybe they get to a partial recovery. Or maybe it takes years to get to that partial recovery.
Mm.
And meanwhile, they're in and out of hospitals. And so there's a physical burden, there's a financial burden,
mm-hmm.
there's an emotional burden on the person who's diagnosed and the family trying to help them.
When someone we care about, a family member or a friend, becomes unwell in this way, it can feel really traumatic and frightening and confusing for people. So what are some of those initial concerns that supporters face, and how can they best cope with those kind of that initial onslaught when that happens?
Yeah, and for so many of us, support groups can be a big lifeline for sure. I'm a big believer in knowledge is power, and knowing all the things that you need to understand to feel empowered, to feel like you can build your own personal roadmap, either as a caregiver or as somebody who might be diagnosed. And to know there's a community, to know that you're not alone,
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
isolation that happens from this illness for both the person diagnosed and the caregiver is astonishing
mm-hmm.
because no one feels like they can talk about this with anybody. And your world collapses in on you because you're now officially alone.
Yep, it certainly feels that way. When we see someone that is in our family that's becoming ill, what would be some do's and don'ts when we're offering assistance? I know we'll see folks that are starting to exhibit symptoms. What would be some things that you would advise, and then things that are like definitely no-nos, like don't go there?
Oh, my gosh. That on its own could be an hour conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess I'll start with if the person is showing signs, but they're not officially diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
As a caregiver, the challenge is you don't want to catastrophize
mm-hmm.
when it could just be errant teenage behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It could be somebody is struggling from depression, which can have psychosis, but
mm-hmm.
doesn't necessarily mean it's serious mental illness. And so there's this broad spectrum of symptoms that may or may not lead to serious mental illness that you may or may not want to focus on and dig into because it might not be anything, but then again, it might be something terrible. And so how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so step one, communication.
Mm-hmm.
Step one is really doing everything you can to partner with
mm-hmm.
your loved one. Now, unfortunately, with serious mental illness is often a symptom called anosognosia, where people don't know they're sick.
Mm-hmm.
They just literally don't see it. And it's a symptom. And so that's why partnering is so important and aligning on goals and aligning on a mutual trajectory so that you can try to get them help.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to get them involved in understanding what's happening to them
mm-hmm.
to see if it is, in fact, something like schizophrenia or if it's something maybe a little less ominous.
Because there are a lot of things that can cause those kinds of symptoms. So it sounds like don't overreact, I guess, and start jumping to conclusions and then kind of gently, like you said, partner with your loved one. Everyone, you're listening to Mental Health Matters on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Andra Hollenbeck of NAMI Southern Oregon, and we're speaking with Nicole Gillen, author of Schizophrenia and Other Related Disorders, a Handbook for Caregivers. So I loved your handbook. It was really very comprehensive and has great information. So we're just going to touch on a top couple of those today. So we know that support for loved ones can be instrumental in a person's recovery. So what's the best role? I mean, I heard you say partner with the person and understand how they may not have insight into what they're experiencing, or they may not want to even acknowledge that there's something going on. But so what is the best role for us as caretakers?
I think on some level it's being a Sherpa, right? If we have the bandwidth, if we have the abilities to do the research, to make the phone calls, to sort of understand all the options and help guide a path,
mm-hmm.
I think that's certainly one role.
Yeah.
Another one is the emotional support dog, right? To just be there, to hug, to hold, to nurture, to coach, to mentor, and
mm-hmm.
just be there
mm-hmm.
to be a little bit of the not the cheerleader from a hoorah, but from like a let's go, let's go get this test, let's
mm-hmm.
go let's go meet this doctor, let's go do this, let's
okay.
go do that,
yeah.
because this illness is so dark and scary,
mm-hmm.
and it brings people into this dark place. So maintaining a sense of we've got this, let's hold hands and try to do this together. And it probably comes across to many people as maybe a little Pollyanna-ish, because if your loved one is showing signs of psychosis and that psychosis is dangerous, then being a cheerleader is not going to apply, because you're trying to mitigate. You are trying to get your hands around this situation and get them support as soon as possible, get them on the right medication so that you can try to get back to reaching them, to engaging with them. Unfortunately, at some points with this illness, because it is a brain disease, your loved one may not really be able to understand what's happening
mm-hmm.
at all. And at that point, it's taking the bull by the horns and being that, tiger mom, or I used to call myself the lion mom, to be out there and knocking down doors to get your loved one the support they need.
Right. So navigating the healthcare system is challenging in the best of times. What are some key things we need to think about when we're helping our loved one navigate this system and get the help that they need?
Unfortunately, for the most part, typically when people get sick, they're over the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not 100%, but as a result, HIPAA
mm-hmm.
is, they call it the HIPAA handcuffs. And it is such an enormous problem in the U.S., where doctors see the caregiver as a pariah. And instead of partnering with them to figure out the right solution and path and medication and treatment and everything else, doctors throw up the HIPAA wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so first things first, as a caregiver, is find the path to whatever legal instrument you can get in place mm-hmm. so that doctors will talk to you. Whether it's a power of attorney or conservatorship or guardianship, do what you can to get something in place.
Or even, I was going to say, even if you can engender that level of trust, and I know that when people are seriously ill, that trust can be a huge impasse because they're scared and very untrusting of what's going on. But yep. if you can gain trust with that person and have them also give you permission for information, that's probably ideal.
Completely agree. And it goes back to the partnering concept I was mm-hmm. talking about before,
right.
which is, If they really feel like you are hip to hip with them and we are going to figure this out together, and if you give me, for example, power of attorney where I can talk to the doctor, I can talk to your insurance company, I can talk to the pharmacy, I can talk to everyone involved to help get you everything you need,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is the lowest bar to leap across. To establish that communication.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's what I did with my daughter uh-huh. was power of attorney because uh-huh. I wanted her to feel like she still had control of her life,
uh-huh.
but that I could help enable things where I could because I am absolutely a tiger mom.
Right. Help her to get the things that she wanted. So yeah. it's often a long-term illness. So what yeah. are some of the long-term issues that come up for supporters and how do we address those?
Oh, gosh. You know, fortunately, and I write about this, but it's everything. It's housing.
Mm-hmm. Finances.
It's financial instability. It's, you know, I worry to death if something happens to me
mm-hmm.
and her and what would happen to her. So there's a lot of sort of estate considerations. And by estate, I don't mean that somebody has to have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what happens after that caregiver passes and mm-hmm. making sure that your loved one's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's about paperwork. It's about establishing all the key information that every doctor, every hospital, everybody needs to know in this process so mm-hmm. that there's continuity of understanding so that mm-hmm. doctors 5 years from now, don't try to put your loved one on a medication that never worked to begin with.
Right. Oh,
you know, and
good point.
So there's this longitudinal aspect that caregivers often have to really think about and prepare for because
mm-hmm.
you just don't know what's gonna throw your loved one sideways or your own life as a caregiver.
Right, right. So one of the things in NAMI we talk about a lot is self-care. While you're doing all this stuff for your loved one and making sure you have that paperwork and you're doing the lion mom thing, how do you take care of yourself?
Well, for me, I also teach fitness at the gym.
Ah.
I'm personally, I'm like a 12-year-old kid. Like I have to get out and burn out all my energy so that I can maintain calm and focus and be deliberate throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge in my world. And then friends, it took me a long time to open up to my
mm-hmm.
friends
yeah.
about what was happening with my daughter. But once I did, it was a relief.
Yeah.
And my parents have been just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So I thankfully have had a really good support system around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me, the best way to deal with my own anxiety and worries is to go beat a bag at the gym.
Right. Right. So get a support system for yourself and then make sure you're taking care of yourself physically, whether that be exercise, nutrition, all that other kind of stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Nicole, I really appreciate you spending a little time with us today. Your book is really good. I have been recommending it to all of people in my support group as something to help them out with whatever issues are coming around. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters on Jefferson Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. For more information about NAMI Southern Oregon, visit our website, namisouthernoregon.org, or email us at info@namisouthernoregon.org. You can find this and other podcasts at jeffexchange.org or subscribe to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.